This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. We all waited with bated breath last night for the last result to come in as far as the 13th general election was concerned. Well, finally, BN has won 133 federal seats. Pakatan took 89. And with me today is Dato' Dr. Denison Jayasuriya. He's a Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, UKM. He's also the Secretary General of PROHAM, which is a Society for the Promotion of Human Rights. Welcome to the show, Dr. Denison.
Yes.
Thank you for coming in. I mean, I saw you on TV last night worked. And, you know, everyone's had a pretty long night. Continuing, though, soldiering on. What was your take on all of this, Dr. Denison? I mean, we BN 133 federal seats, Pakatan 89. We're going to be focusing pretty much more on the growing rural-urban divide of a fast... We are a fast-developing nation. We want to reach, you know, high-income status by 2020. What does all of this mean for us moving forward? I mean, what was your first... observations when as results were coming in?
I think in terms of the results itself, a number of people had predicted that Barisan would win, but with a lower majority as opposed to 2008. Although Barisan, some of the key leaders were very optimistic of a two-third victory, and of course Pakatan Raya had the also the analysis that they would win. But I think for a majority of the analysts, the focus was very much on the rural seats, that although Pakatan would secure and has secured a larger popular vote, but in terms of that translating into parliamentary seats, is because of this rural-urban divide. Mm-hmm. And the urban constituencies are much larger. And while some have said this is a real Chinese tsunami, I would tend to feel it's an urban tsunami, that the urban contacts, urban voters across board, whether it is Indian, Chinese, including Malays, have an alternative view of what they would feel parliamentary democracy and democratic freedoms would mean. My wife and I voted at Subang Jaya, and we could see this as we waited. So the older people were all out there by 8, 8.30, 9 o'clock. We were waiting almost 2 hours to cast our vote on the queue. So we then begin to see this as a reality, and we can definitely see across the country this. And Pakatan has done well because it has secured more. I know sections among them are very unhappy. There is even a campaign of blacking out your Facebook account and things. And I think those are expressions that individuals want to have. But the reality is that across the board, simple majority then forms the federal government, and we see this across board on the state governments. Mm-hmm. And the state governments, of course, I was a bit surprised that Perak, I thought it would go to Pakatan Rakyat, but I think it is a close flight, and it's reflective of the 2008 as well, with a slight difference. But I think Kedah was anticipated. I think the Mukris factor did play a part. I think inefficiencies within the Kedah state government of the past were also factors. But I think Terengganu almost went. And so we see in many ways different kind of voting patterns in the Malay heartlands, because we are seeing in some cases they are voting straight for PAS. In some cases, it's back to UMNO. So I think a lot of personality factor as well as local issues also played. I mean, for Mat Sabu to lose, for Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah to lose in predominantly Malay constituencies where these were much more open-minded people. And so there is this rural-urban issue. And as I said, I'm not putting it as a Chinese tsunami, as some have said, But I would describe it because my reason for this is being that while Pakatan got 89, 51 of that comes from PKR and PAS. And so much of PAS seats, 21, are Malay majority areas, and 30 of PKR is definitely in mixed constituencies, also with Malay majority areas. Large numbers of their candidates were also. But I think we are seeing this sweep against Gerakan. MCA is at its weakest point. PPP, has lost out. MIC has a very much reduced performance compared to 2008. In spite of all what Dato' Sri Najib has done in terms of addressing Indian issues, MIC in itself was not able to pick up. I mean, only 4 out of 9 parliamentary, and I think about 2 or so of the state out of 18, is a very dismal performance of Barisan partners with UMNO in this case. So they need to really relook at how voters are perceiving them and its impact on governance and community representation. I think these are factors that need to be taken into account.
MC President has said that the party will respect the electorate's wishes and will not participate in forming the cabinet. Now, do you think that's necessarily the best way to go forward?
I think it's up to individual parties. I think he did indicate that before. And as I have written and elsewhere, I think this is the first time in the history since 52, 1952, when MCA and UMNO contested in municipal elections, that we are seeing that MCA president is not actually leading the community as a partner. And that could have had an effect. But overall, I think there is a loss of confidence on non-Malay leadership within the Barisan Nasional as being able to represent their best interests on the kind of expectations that the communities have. It's not out of the world, but in many sections, it's beyond basic quality of life, its accountability, transparency, its various issues. And so I think, you know, if MCA feels that way, then I think they should sit out of government for a while. But can they play an effective advocacy role? And so they should also recognize that some of their leaders were elected and they could have a role, you know. So yeah. You shouldn't punish the community. But then the party should decide collectively as a membership and revamp, you know, the leadership and look at it. I think MIC would have to go through an internal process. Gerakan would have to, and PPP would have to, because PPP leader contested at the state seat and he lost. Gerakan leader did not contest. Some of them have come into government on senatorships. That's one possibility. But I think elected representatives are more credible as community representatives. But I think Barisan would have to relook at its equation. Is there time now for Barisan to look at itself as an inclusive, singular party representing the interests of all Malaysians? Mm-hmm. It's going to On Jaffar's theme. Do they still want to be race-based? If the race-based parties are being rejected by the communities, because DAP has far more representatives from the Indian community in parliament, and it's a multiracial or predominantly having a strong Chinese base in the urban areas. They have secured a sizable number of representation in all the urban constituencies and even at state level. So DAP, in effect, becomes a much stronger representative from a community perspective. And there are individuals in PKR as well.
Yeah.
So this is a wake-up call for Barisan Nasional to re-strategize. And I think political transformation, looking at hearts and minds, looking at assessment, looking at, rebranding themselves, because I think MIC or PPP or Gerakan as a brand has become unpopular or tainted, or people see it differently. Mm-hmm. But an Indian standing in DAP or PKR seems to have a better chance than if he stood otherwise. You know,
as you said, you know, we've done PKR has done quite well. The PR has done quite well as far as the urban areas are concerned. But can we move forward effectively? Can we rule effectively without the urban electorate?
I think there is, in many ways, as Dato' Sri Najib in his victory speech early in the hours, in accepting the victory of a simple majority, did acknowledge this tremendous divide. He put it more as a Chinese, non-Chinese divide. But I think he recognized there was a major urban swing, and he called for national reconciliation. For national reconciliation, which is an important theme, I think the South African government underwent that. It is linked to social cohesion, it is justice and fairness, it is ensuring people have access, equal access. It's many of the themes that Dato' Sri Najib himself has advocated, inclusiveness, his theme of moderation. Then I think he must now not allow others within his party to hijack his views. I think if he had it his own way in many of these issues, because there were a lot of contradictions in the case of Pasir Mas candidate and UMNO candidate withdrawing and the independent contesting, the candidate for Shah Alam, the candidate for Batu Tiga, went contrary to inclusiveness and moderation from the Barisan National point of view. And many of the objections were disregarded. Now you see a total abandonment of these candidates from the grassroots.
Yep.
And these are predominantly Malay Muslim majority areas within that context.
When we come back, we'll find out some of the reasoning as to why there could have been the rejection of the candidates in, you know, Kelantan, Shah Alam, as well as Batu Tiga. If you have a question for Dr. Dennison, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. It's the day after elections and all the results came out last night. Well, Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya with me. He's a Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia, also Secretary General of PROHAM. We're discussing, you know, the urban-rural divide in Malaysia based on the results last night and how this will take us forward in becoming, you know, a faster developing nation. Dr. Dennison, just now you spoke about, you know, the Kelantan seat, which was lost by Ibrahim Ali of Perkasa. Shah Alam Zulkifli Nordin, he lost. And there was a chap in Batu Tiga as
Ahmad Nawawi.
That's right. Now, what is your interpretation of their loss? And this has to do with the whole, you know, urban-rural divide.
I think to me, it renewed my confidence of the Malay community at the grassroots. Because I would think, having mixed with ordinary Malays at the grassroots, whether it's at the kampung or the urban areas, actually they're very inclusive, they're very accommodative in themes of the sort. So actually, and contestation in that way, I think there's a kind of a rejection of what these men stood for. And that's why in Pasir Mas it's over 90% Malay Muslim constituency. In Shah Alam it's about 70, it's more an urban area, and there is about 14% of Chinese and Indians. And these candidates losing is a kind of an indication that the grassroots is not in favor. We have to take that. So the grassroots voice has emerged as a rejection of this kind of politics, and they moved on to pass in terms of representation. This is why then you have the case of Mat Sabu losing, or Dato' Shaifuddin,
yep,
who's much more progressive, actually really needed at this point when UMNO is reorganizing, but the constituencies reject him. So I think in that sense, the grassroots have a way of handling, and national leaders will have to have their ears on the ground in a more consultative manner, in a way more open, rather than pushing certain political agenda. Mm-hmm. I think this is where the urban sort of constituencies need to also recognize that the Malay grassroots is not one particular type that is antithesis to the urban. Mm-hmm. So the urban voters who might have gone one way need to now take stock and recognize that Malay Muslim voters have rejected Ibrahim Ali. They have rejected Zulkifli Noordin. They have rejected Ahmad Nawawi, who were strongly backed by national leaders and significant people on that score. It's the same kind of funny scenario that you're seeing in Sabah and Sarawak, because in many ways, the rural voters, or even in non-Muslim Bumiputra areas, where I myself thought the issues related to religious freedom, like the Allah issue, or indigenous people's lands, which were a major concern, seem to have bypassed these voters. So whether for these voters in the rural area, political patronage is an issue, whether there was other forms of intimidation, whether these are non-issues to the grassroots voters because they're looking at bread and butter sort of issues, day-to-day, their dependency on state agencies. So the loftier ideas, to them, they would feel, you know, it's facts of life, let's carry on, sort. So we are seeing a surprising non-shift in the non-Muslim Bumiputra constituencies towards alternatives for Baru Bian, who in Sarawak stood out as an outstanding advocate, lawyer, him losing the parliamentary seat after winning a state seat, are also indications that the grassroots are different. So a lot more of political consciousness and awareness needs to take place because the Sabah and Sarawak parliamentary seats seem to only reflect that the infiltration of the opposition parties in Sabah, it's only 3, in Sarawak, it's only 6. So it's only an incremental impact on some urban seats as opposed to a massive sort of hit like the Klang Valley.
Yep.
You're not seeing it in like Klang Valley or Penang, where there's heightened concentration of interest for change. So I think having noted these, we need to be conscious that even in our analysis, we don't so quickly make it a racial divide or a religious divide, but actually beginning to see that ordinary people have certain needs and they have certain issues. The rural seem to be much more on quality of life sort of issues, and the urban seems to be higher concerns of transparency, human rights, democracy, access to information, truth, these sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those divides will take us on into the 14th general election, because it's going to consolidate much more by the time, because Malaysia, as it goes towards 2020 with an increased urbanized population, with greater increase of social media into rural areas, with the internet, with alternative media, you're going to see some major challenges from the rural ends for the next round, next time round.
You know, we know that government is going to have a lot of, you know, work to do when it comes to moving the country the next 5 years. But what should the opposition focus on?
Yes. I thought in terms of Dato' Sri Najib's immediate speech was quite magnanimous. I think he was, quite honourable and credible to accept the will of the people. He said it was the maturity. He called for national reconciliation. I think the message that came from the opposition end was that they were going to contest the election results. I would have felt that whether the media covered the opposition leader adequately through news coverage and all, I think there should have been equal amount of time at that point for him to deliver a speech, to say something to the nation as a whole. But I would think that the opposition parties that secured 89, they might not be happy with it, but they have seen some progress, should also focus, if they have complaints of misgiving, if there are specific areas of violations, then they should file it, they should document it, they should go to the election commission, they should go to the courts, they should settle that. But at the same time, they should look at the political process, the shadow cabinet, the alternative voices. They shouldn't jam it up like how they tried to do in 2008, because then it was like trying to take over the government. It was setting the dates. It created a lot of
hostility,
uncertainty within that context. So I think the parties will have to decide whether the opposition leader is going to come from the party with the largest number of seats, which is DAP, or will it be PKR still and pass, because their policy is the party with the largest number should become the opposition leader. So it's up to the parties, but I think they should get their act together. They should hold the government accountable. They should call for greater bipartisan discussion. They should respond to the national reconciliation action plan. They shouldn't see it as everything is gone. Let's fight it through the courts. Let's challenge these results. I think it's not going to build the nation. I think they should then take it to the next course of action to see how can we build this nation, how can we build greater security, how can we build greater confidence, how can we build greater accountability of the parliamentary process. And I think this is where Barisan must respond by strengthening parliament. Don't see them in the opposition as enemies. See them as people who are duly elected by the people. They are elected by a larger number of people because they won the popular vote. So I think this is not only magnanimity at the personal end, but it's recognizing democracy. And Dato Sri Najib has the right public policy of inclusion, economic transformation, of effective deliverance. But I think the government, federal government, need to be far more engaging, far more recognizing elected members of the opposition, ensuring that the battle in parliament is not to run down the other chap, but to tap his resources so that the economy of the country can be built to such an extent that Malaysia would be strong. I think every opposition leader should work for the success of this nation. They should work so that Malaysia can compete better in ASEAN. It could tap into China and India to grow. And I think people, ordinary people, believe this so. And I think both for Barisan as well as the opposition, bipartisan work could be the way forward. I know in Malaysia, each party wants to hold credit to what they are accomplishing. By party, small majorities, whether it's Australia, whether it's Britain, even in other more developed democracies, even India, it's actually minority groups that are actually running governments effectively. But a lot of bipartisan discussion, select committees. So we need to move into another phase of democratic maturity and practice in this country.
Are we ready, though? Are we ready? Sounds like a utopia.
No, I don't think. This is basic to most countries. Malaysia is at the threshold of becoming a developed country. we are at high income level, and if Malaysians at the end of the day could vote responsibly, could be in their homes watching, like many of us spent the whole night awake listening to the result, and it was atrocious that some of the results were being delayed for such a long period of time. I think access to information must be transparent, it must be neutral, because that it then builds credibility to news agencies and that it's not being rigged. Because people even called me when I was on TV studio and they were asking, you know, are people planning something else? Why are they not announcing? And so it creates doubt, it creates suspicion. And I think politicians from both the political divide need to see it. So it's not just a Barisan action, it's also the action of the Pakatan side. They've fought a good fight, they have argued well, accept the decision of the people. Where there are misgivings, file it, fight it in the courts, but don't jam the parliamentary process. Don't jam the development of the nation. Don't jam investor confidence. So it's as much for the opposition to bring in investment. And you can make claims because you got Penang, you got Selangor, you got state governments, you got Kelantan. You know, you want investor growth, you want to increase the quality of life of the people, and then benchmark it in that way. So I think there's much that can be done, but there needs to be some freshness in political thinking. Because if people were thinking of two-third majority and getting 133, you're going to be very depressed. So if you are depressed, okay, take a day or two, but you have to recover. No? If not, resign. No? Give the post to someone else. Right. And to others who couldn't achieve it, then see it as the next stage. It's not over yet. There are younger politicians, groom them. There is always tomorrow to continue the battle. But the battle is not for individual party gain or individual politician. The battle is for a better Malaysia. It's for a happier Malaysian society. It's for economic growth in the midst of competition around. It is building social cohesion. This reconciliation is important between urban and rural, between communities, because so many things were said. So many people have been upset over the campaigning period. So there is a period of healing. And this needs to take time. It's a spiritual exercise. It's also a meditation exercise. It's also an exercise for people to chat and talk, to build trust again. And even if we doubt, let's hold each other accountable. So fulfillment of promises at the federal level, state level. I think civil society needs to continue to play an active role for economic and social development. As well as the media to check on promises, how it will be delivered, because it's just starting. Governments, state governments have to be formed, state cabinets have to be appointed, local councillors have to be appointed, federal government has to be appointed. What are they going to do with Chinese representatives if no one in MCA want to? You know? So maybe they should tender and ask professionals from the Chinese community if they want to come up and serve, you know, or have some participatory process or have some parliamentary process in which many of these issues. So you can do it in other ways as well. So there needs to be some political creativity and not the old school. It's not just I will fight for my own race and my community, my religion. And I think people on the ground are saying differently, and we need to articulate the groundswell in what the results have shown.
Dr. Dennison, you've always been concerned about the 40% population,
yes,
bottom of the population. What does all of this mean for them?
I think in one sense, at the parliamentary level, most of the parliaments, let's say in the Klang Valley and KL, actually has gone to opposition hands. and then the Selangor State Government, and Penang, Perak, of course, is back to the Barisan. So we will have to see how the delivery process in terms of federal-state relations are strengthened. I think in 2008, the federal government set up its alternative delivery process, and that became very politicized in its delivery. It was trying to bypass state governments, and it had a whole separate machinery of delivery. I think there has to be greater magnanimity of the federal government to recognize the state governments in financial allocations, in terms of access to federal agencies operating. I mean, it's unthinkable that a chief minister of a particular state cannot go into a school or institution that is actually operating within the state. I think we have to be far more matured because it's the people's election. You know? I think any disregard to an elected politician who is fulfilling his duty is a rejection of democracy and people power. So I think federal-state relations have to be improved. This is not just at parliament level, but in the ways agencies begin to recognize chief ministers, exco's at the state, on equal par, that they are elected by the people and that they have a duty to play. So I think for the bottom 40%, it's a lot to do with quality of life. It's housing. So housing cannot just be handled by federal government. Federal might have the funds, but the state has the land. A lot of school-related issues, housing, licenses for small businesses, local transport within the state, city, affordable transport, and things of the sort. So there needs to be a greater collaborative process, at least now with the three state governments and the federal government and other state governments. Because I think the bottom 40% in the urban areas seem to have also given support to dissatisfaction of services, whether it is the flats, the lifts, the maintenance of public space in those areas. And I think the state governments, especially in Selangor and also in Wilayah, because in Wilayah you now have, like before, largest number of MPs coming from opposition parties. They have very little access to city council and the way the city is run. You know? And I think there has to be a greater engagement with the city and the city machinery and the federal agencies that are operating. If they continue to alienate, I think Barisan-led government would continue to have problems with urban voters. So I think it's now the Barisan politicians will have to take stock, but at least a new team have to move in to then see how they want to negotiate within this context and how they want to engage with the agencies, the people, the residents' association, the elected officials in these places, members of parliament, and teams of the sort. So what kind of access do they have in the delivery and improvement of life of the people? So don't see elected members of parliament as per se from a particular political party, but see them as public officials elected by the people to represent. Because any federal agency is not using their own political financing. They are using public funds. And so public funds must be accessible and accountable. And I think both civil society, urban voters are looking at these. How much is allocated to state governments, whether Sabah Sarawak in its delivery. And don't make everything of delivery from now till the 14th general election as an election campaign, you know, and tool. So I think we have to stop this. So politicians who got elected, who will hold public office, should see themselves first in their public office and second as an elected politician. But if they see themselves as elected politicians with, you know, plus a public office, then their political position supersede their public office. Then I think there is conflict. I think 2008-12 to the 13th general election, this inability to separate the political party function and government function is a major problem. And I think this time, both federal and state should distinguish those duties and responsibilities and then say, I'm now a public official fulfilling a public function using public funds. I'm not campaigning, you know. I'm delivering with the mandate that is given. And during election time, campaign. So I think there has to be some discipline. I don't think Election Commission has the powers now to monitor this kind. But I think civil society like BRISE and other groups can begin to see that day one of the state government or federal government, they cannot see it as, let's start the campaign for the 14th general election and let's keep hammering it over the next 4 years. Then perpetually, we are not getting down to the drawing board. We are not moving on with actual delivery. So we need to distinguish the political process and the government process in this context.
Thank you very much for joining me. Dr. Denison Jayasuriya on reflecting the growing rural-urban divide of this fast-developing nation on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.